How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Okay, so a little bit out of tune episode today. I recorded an episode with John Hammond around 9 p.m. Eastern Time before the Thunder signed Patrick Patterson, or before it was reported that the Thunder signed Patrick Patterson. We talked about the effects of Gordon Hayward going to Boston and what that meant for the Thunder and all of those other things. Then Woj reports that the Thunder signed Patrick Patterson to a three-year deal. That's obviously the lead story, so I recorded another episode with Locked On Raptors host Sean Woodley. So I'm going to splice in the conversation that I have with Sean Woodley. That's going to be our lead. And then I'm going to go into the conversation that I have with Ham after. We're going to be talking more. So two guests today, two conversations. Let's get ready to lock in.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm Fred Katz from Locked On Thunder. I'm with Sean Woodley, Locked On Raptors. Raptors Republic, is that right? Raptors Republic. Right?
Raptors HQ. Raptors Republic are the hated enemy.
Raptors HQ. Oh. You know, I read them both, and I'm not going to lie, they're like kind of the – I confuse them all the time. So, Raptors – so it's basically the same to me. Raptors Republic, Raptors HQ, whatever. We got the same.
Anyway,
the
friends, it's all fine. We all cover the same stuff. It's the same thing.
There we go. You get it. Yeah. The Thunder just stole your heart a little bit, so I hear.
Mid level. Yeah, Patrick Patterson, man. I have some thoughts about Patrick Patterson. Of course, 3 years, $16.4 million, which like. First of all, if you were to look a year ago, if Patrick Patterson were to hit free agency a year ago, I mean, think of the contracts that were being handed out. And Patterson, he was better than, like, Bismack Biyombo. He was better than Timo Mozgov. He was better than all of those really bad centers that got 17 or 18 million bucks a year. And he's going to make less annually this coming season than he will, than all of those guys will make next season, which is kind of crazy. Because Patrick Patterson, if people don't really know about Patrick Patterson, the only way I can describe him is like the perfect role player. And the Raptors are really going to miss him. It's really hard to describe what he does on the floor because you look at his stat line and it's like not that impressive. It's like perennially 8 points, six rebounds, and you know, not much else. He'll get a block or two here or there in whatever game. Like he's not racking up blocks. He's not racking up steals. He's just kind of there. But everything he does on the floor contributes to ridiculous plus-minus numbers, and the Raptors always being better when he's on the floor. So it's going to be a big loss for the Raptors and, like, a tremendous game for the Thunder.
Yeah, I love this signing. He's a guy who, like, I went on – so there's another local Thunder podcast, Down to Dunk, which mm-hmm. I went on with Andrew Schlecht on that podcast, like, a month and a half ago. And he asked me, who's, like, the perfect dream role player you would think for this Thunder team? And obviously they've changed since then. Paul George exists now, and it's a totally different thing. But I kind of still felt the same way. And I said at the time, I was like, I think they're going to use the mid-level. I think the preference, at least, is to use a mid-level on some kind of stretch four because I didn't anticipate. Mm-hmm. And I think most people in town didn't anticipate Taj Gibson coming back. He was probably just a rental. And I thought if there was some way they could get Patrick Patterson, that would be, I think, a great signing. He has great experience. And you said the contract details, right? 3 for 16.4 per Woj?
Yeah. That's, again, a ridiculous bargain.
Jared Dubin tweeted out that he, over the 3 years, now the final year is a player option, but for argument's sake, over 3 years, if he picks up the player option, he will make less over 3 years than Joakim Noah is making this season.
Yeah, that gets back to those bad centers last summer. They got all those contracts. Like, Patterson is more useful than all of them. Obviously, he's mostly a four. He can play the five. He did a little bit this season more than he did before. And yeah, like going into this offseason, you looked at Patrick Patterson and PJ Tucker, the two sort of second tier free agents on the Raptors. Like Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka were the number one guys you had to bring back. I expected Patterson to get more than Tucker just because of the body of work, just because I think his skill set's a little bit more conducive to the modern NBA. Like Tucker's really good, and I think he's going to be awesome on the Rockets. But Patterson, he's got a little bit of playmaking to him. He's got that 3-point shot, which, I mean, Thunder fans are going to come to learn that his 3-point shot comes and goes. He'll have months where he shoots like 18%, but then he'll shoot like 48% for a month or two. And he always seems to stabilize around 36, 37% by the end of the year. People in Toronto were kind of down on him because he was very bad in the playoffs. He had one play in particular. I think it was game one against the Cavaliers. He got the ball wide open on the wing, no one even remotely close to him. And instead of just launching up the shot, he decided to attempt to take a dribble and instead traveled. And that was kind of indicative of his, you know, 3 years, 4 years of kind of being apprehensive with a 3-point shot. Like when he takes it, it's usually money, and you can feel pretty confident that he's a guy that people have to guard. But when he is apprehensive about it, when he's not confident, that's where it leads to trouble. He did get better this year, though, in terms of being able to put the ball on the floor in those situations where he didn't want to shoot. It was always kind of cringeworthy when he'd get the ball on the wing and try to attack a closeout because he just didn't really have a plan what to do with it. What I likened it to, remember in the finals a couple years ago when Draymond Green would get the ball on the short roll and didn't really have a plan for the first like three games of that series before they started Andre Iguodala and they kind of figured it out from there?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so he kind of would just, like, barrel to the basket without a plan. That used to be Patterson, but he's kind of figured it out a little bit more. He's got a bit of passing. The Raptors are really going to miss him because he was really the only big man on the roster that could do any sort of secondary playmaking or passing out of the short roll. So, like, a lot of the skills that he's going to leave the Raptors without, I think the Thunder are going to make tremendous use out of it. He's a good pick and pop player. He's not like a, you know, doesn't really roll to the basket all that often, but he can do it serviceably. And his defense, I think, is his best thing. Like, it's kind of underrated because he doesn't rack up the steals and block totals, but he can switch on to multiple defenders. At times, he's been like the Raptors' best option to put on Giannis or LeBron or Paul George in the past. Like, he's been really good defensively the last couple seasons. I think I kind of noticed it at the start of the 2015-16 season where he started switching on to guys and actually hanging with them and holding his own. And over the last 2 years, he's been excellent. And I think I saw Josh Lewenberg, covers the Raptors for TSN 1050 up here at radio station. He tweeted out the number that over the last three seasons, over the last three seasons, Patterson is a plus 1,004 when he's on the floor with the Raptors, and the Raptors are minus 38 with him off the floor. I think that's pretty much all you need to know about everything Patrick Patterson does.
One of the reasons that I thought this was going to be a good fit for the Thunder, which I was starting to say, and then I totally lost track and started talking about his contract because I don't pay attention to myself.
Sorry, I totally ran over for like 3 minutes there talking about
it's okay. That's your eulogy, you know? But one of the reasons that I thought he could be a good fit for them is not just because of his skill set, but because of his history. Like, he is very used to playing next to ball-dominant perimeter players. Like, he has played next to Kyle Lowry and been very successful next to Kyle Lowry. He has played next to DeMar DeRozan and been very successful next to DeMar DeRozan. And I get the impression that he's probably going to be able to do the same next to Russell Westbrook and now Paul George, because those are guys who obviously want to have the ball. Obviously, everybody knows Russ wants to have the ball. He'll tell you the ball is his friend. So that's something that I think is going to be really good for Patrick Patterson, where he needs to have the ball for a half a second max. He shot 40-41% from the corners last year. You can put him there and you're good to go. The Thunder now, and Nate Duncan made this point on Twitter on the other side, and you talked about his defense. The Thunder now are about as well equipped to guard the Warriors as any other team in the league with how many switchy defenders that they have and the switchy lineups they can throw out, especially if they re-sign Andre Robertson. Because they've got Westbrook, they've got, and when Westbrook is going, he's somebody you can play in switchy lineups with, even though his defense is obviously at best inconsistent and at worst not good at all. But you got Robertson, who's an all-defense guy and can guard 1, 2, 3, and a lot of fours, especially those like modern stretch fours. You can certainly guard fours against Golden State. You've got now Patterson, who can be switch onto guys and be a good backline defender and be pretty good in pick and rolls, and you can switch with him. You've got Jeremy Grant, who's a tremendous athlete and whose defense in the backline of pick and rolls improved a lot, especially over the last couple months of the season. That's how the Thunder used him. They used him to switch onto James Harden during the playoffs last year. You've got a lot of those types of guys. You've got Steven Adams on the back end, too, who the Thunder have used in switchy types of defensive schemes before. I mean, this is a team that is now going to allow for lots of versatile defensive lineups, which is interesting because it's a total 360 from where they were at last year when they went into the season with just an overload of conventional bigs, and it looked like they were just kind of gorging on offensive rebounding, and they were just trying to find some kind of post-Durant identity on the fly. And that's kind of where they – I don't think that's what they really wanted to do, but it's kind of what they meandered into. And now they've got these versatile, athletic – fours and threes, these, you know, even like a Josh Huestis fits this type if he's a guy who they think is going to be able to get 10 minutes a game this year, even though he hasn't played in the past. These athletic, you know, defensive minded, versatile guys who can be competent running those sorts of aggressive defensive schemes. And I am so curious to see how they're going to play against those elite types of offenses, you know, the types of Golden State and those positionless types of teams. They could be a really good defensive team.
Yeah, Patterson's defense, as I mentioned, really goes under the radar. But again, I really do agree with that point that he makes them so much more switchy. And the thing with the Warriors, sorry, with the Thunder, is that like they'd roll out these lineups with like Roberson and like all these really good defenders, but none of them could shoot. Whereas Patterson can actually be that guy who can stand in the corner and, as you mentioned, hit 41% of his threes and actually be a guy that people have to guard. Like, he doesn't make you compromise on one end of the floor by being out there. And like you said, like, he's going to be perfect to play off of Westbrook and George because you want him to have a low usage. You don't want him being in the mid-20s in usage. You want him, like, 15 to 20% at most. And that if he's doing that, I love this fit so much. Next to Steven Adams as well. You know, Patterson was always really good playing with Jonas Valanciunas. That was kind of the thing with Patterson over the course of his time with the Raptors. Is like it for the last two or three seasons, it felt like he should be starting. I mean, Amir Johnson was here three seasons ago, and I guess you could make the argument that he was still fine to start. But then they brought in Luis Scola, and Scola started the entire season before Patterson took over the starter in the playoffs, and the Raptors became instantly better. And Valanciunas was always much better with Patterson next to him. And then last season, they started Pascal Siakam as the four for the first 38 games. Patterson got in for a few games, then got hurt, and then the team completely cratered. People sort of look at what happened to the Raptors last season, and like they kind of fell off in January after a really quick start, and that pretty much exactly coincided with Patterson having about a month and a half where he wasn't right and his knee was messed up. And then after the trade deadline, he kind of fell out of the crunch time rotation because Tucker and Ibaka kind of took over the closing minutes at the four and five. But Patterson was a big reason. He was the third most important player on the Raptors before he got hurt and before the trades were made. And I think really he does fit every single thing that the Thunder are going to want to do. I just love this fit so much. And it pains me, man, because like Patterson reminds me of the resurgence that the Raptors made. He was brought in with that Rudy Gay trade, and no one really thought of it anything of it at the time. Like, it was like, oh, Patrick Patterson, he's a throw-in for this Rudy Gay deal to match salary. Like, no one thought he was going to be with the team long-term. He was a free agent that summer, ended up re-signing for $6 million a year. And, you know, it's crazy he made more in his last contract than he is this contract, where he's established himself as, like, a legitimately good defensive player while on his last contract. It's really bizarre to me, but I'm not going to get over that number for a while. And, yeah, he's part of the Raptors resurgence. He's part of the core that really sort of turned this franchise around. He's the last remaining member of all the guys that came back in the Rudy Gay trade, and it's a sad time, I think. I mean, a lot of Raptors fans have kind of grown tired of him. I think just the fact that he became unreliable at times in the playoffs and the fact that his three-point shot was so come and go, I think people kind of tired of that. But for me, as a guy who watched him sort of grow into the player he became over the last few years, it really was an awesome transformation, really, to see, even though his numbers kind of stayed flat. Every other aspect of his game became much better. He's going to be a perfect fit on the Thunder.
Speaking of Rudy Gay, by the way, because the Thunder have been on Rudy Gay. I'm sorry, I know the Toronto fans don't care about this as much, but this is quite relevant to the Thunder. Thunder probably out on Rudy Gay now. I mean, this is an admission the Thunder out on Rudy Gay. They gave Patterson that taxpayer mid-level, which, by the way, is not going to hard cap the Thunder now, so they're not at risk of being hard capped, which they would have if they gave Rudy Gay, say, the $8.4 million mid-level. But Rudy Gay is probably out. I imagine he's going to end up in Miami or Utah or somewhere else where they're going to pay him a lot more money, and he will have to take less money to go to the Thunder. I don't think that's going to be the case. That being said, I think Patrick Patterson is a significantly better fit than Rudy Gay. I was never a big fan of Rudy Gay's fit in this team. He's a ball-dominant guy, and he's 30. He's going to be 31 at the start of the season, and he's coming off an Achilles. And the entire list of guys on the wrong end of 30 who are coming off an Achilles injury, who recovered capably. The entire list is Dominique Wilkins, and that's it. There's nobody else on that list. I don't quite understand the bidding war for Rudy Gay, but I guess it's there. I feel like we all kind of agreed on Rudy Gay a long time ago, and like we were kind of reverting back to where we were before. If you're going to get him for cheap or something, that's great. But if you want to stick him in as your starting four, like when you've got Paul George and you've got Russell Westbrook, the Thunder could use other stuff. Like they could use maybe, I think at the time could use another shooter. Now I think they're okay. They could use a backup point guard. Like Patrick Patterson, a guy who's a low usage guy, who can catch and shoot, who can defend well and defend in different types of schemes. Like I would rather have that guy than a Rudy Gay type. And you've seen Rudy Gay play. He was in Toronto. I feel like you probably agree with me on this, right?
Yeah, let me tell you, you don't want Rudy Gay playing with other ball-dominant guys. That doesn't make any sense. I think, yes, Westbrook and George are better than what Lowry and DeRozan were when Gay was here, but, like, no, it doesn't work. Like, Rudy Gay needs to be sort of the focal point of an offense to really have any utility, I think, and it's just not, I don't see where that would fit. So, yeah, I think Patterson, for a team that has those high-usage guys, I think he's a perfect guy to just not get in the way and just be there to augment everybody. Like, again, he's been a big part of a lot of the Raptors' best lineups over the last few years. I think this season he finished like something like 19th in the entire NBA in terms of total plus minus, and that was missing like 13 games or whatever he missed. I think the season before he was even higher in terms of total plus minus. Like, it's kind of inexplicable, but whenever he's on the floor, you kind of pencil in a Raptors run, and I think that's probably going to be similar. And if the Thunder decide to, you know, not stagger their stars, which has been a problem for them in the past, as I gather, like Patterson's a guy that can just kind of keep you afloat because he's not going to score for you, but he's going to defend the hell out of the ball on the other end. And he's just I don't really know how to explain it. It's when he goes in the lineup, the team just becomes better. The Raptors had this ridiculous bench unit over the last few years where the center kind of swapped out here and there, but it was mostly Kyle Lowry with Corey Joseph, Terrence Ross, Patrick Patterson, and then insert center here, whether it's Lucas Nogueira or Bismack Biyombo. And it was just always lethal. And yes, Lowry's probably a big part of that, but when you take Patterson out of it, it kind of fell off too. And Patterson and Lowry have always been the two best on-court guys for the Raptors in terms of plus-minus, in terms of net rating. And the Raptors are going to miss him in the Thunder, man. Again, this is such a good pickup for them, and I'm going to miss Patterson. The other thing, too, with Patterson is I know people in OKC probably suffer from the same sort of complex that Raptors fans do. Like, do players like playing here? Do players want to be here? Patrick Patterson embraced the city of Toronto as much as any player in Raptors history. He became a big sort of part of the Toronto International Film Festival. He became, you know, he would write, you know, movie reviews and things like that for the CBC, which is the equivalent of ABC up here for you guys. He would do radio, like regular radio spots and things like that. When he didn't really have to, he would do like a weekly radio spot on one of the stations in Toronto. He's a really good guy to just sort of endear himself to a city, and I think he's probably going to do that in OKC as well. Things kind of ended rocky with him. He didn't show up to locker cleanout day for the Raptors. He kind of lost his, again, as I mentioned, he lost his crunch time rotation spot after the trade. So it kind of was all leading towards this and him leaving. But I can't really speak highly enough of this signing. I think it's going to be really good for the Thunder. The Thunder are freaking scary now, man. I don't know. Like, the Western Conference is insane, but, like, would anyone be shocked if the Thunder came, like, third, like, behind the Rockets and Warriors? Like, I definitely wouldn't. I think Patterson helps that out a lot.
I think that might be right. I mean, I don't know what to expect from the Spurs, because I feel like us thinking that the Spurs are top three in the West is purely based on just them being the Spurs and thinking they're going to figure it out. But they've got issues at point guard with Parker hurt, and they've got other issues on the team too, where they could add some stuff in a lot of different places. And I feel like purely based on roster, the Thunder roster is probably better than theirs. But like, I also think they're the Spurs, and they're gonna jump back up. I could see them finishing third with the way that they're trending. I mean, this roster is really good. I could see them finishing ahead of Houston too. I mean, I think that's plausible. This roster is really good, and it's not done. They're going to pay the tax now. They've got $113 million on the books for next year. They're still, I think, strongly considering re-signing Andre Roberson. I thought, depending on what he's going to get, I think they'd really like to bring back him. The tax line, they're only about $6 million away from that. They still need to sign Terrence Ferguson to his rookie deal. So they're going to pay the tax. And they've been telling teams that they are going to pay the tax. And I wasn't sure if that was just kind of a bluff or if it's something they're going to do. But the way that they're operating, like, they don't make this deal if they're worried about paying the tax. I think it's possible we see them stretching Kyle Singler or something like that. That would save them a little over $3 million for this season if they were going to make that move. But they still likely be in the tax if they do plan on bringing back Roberson and filling out the rest of this roster. I don't see a way where they don't pay it. So they're going to be one of the many teams this upcoming year paying the tax. I have one more question for you before we head out. It's kind of been a Patrick Patterson love fest. He signed for a little over $5 million a year. I agree with you. It's a really good value signing. His skill set is extremely well suited for this start, for a starting lineup of this style, and whether defensively or offensively. I think it's a really good signing by the Thunder. One of my buddies immediately called me up. This is not someone who works in basketball. This is just like a buddy from growing up. But he's a big basketball fan. Called me up and was like, "Dude, that's the best contract of the summer." When do we? So people are pumped about this. And I think rightfully so. I think it's a good signing, and I think the Thunder are better now than they were like an hour ago when they didn't have Patrick Patterson signed up. But he's a $5 million player. He has flaws. So give me Patrick. We can't just go a whole podcast and not talk about Patrick Patterson's flaws, because that would be silly. Yeah. So give me Patrick Patterson's flaws.
Well, I think I touched on them a bit. Like, his three-point shot, it can be maddening at times. Like, there are times where he just doesn't hit a shot for a month, and you're like, what the hell's going on? That happened to happen during the playoffs this year, which was very poorly timed because none of the Raptors shooters were hitting anything. And then the other thing, too, I mentioned that he's kind of improved his off-the-dribble stuff, and, like, that is a pretty small sample that I'm drawing from, and it was pretty much after he came back from injury when he kind of seemed to refine that a little bit. And it very well could regress to where he has no idea what he's doing. He'll put up these weird, awkward floaters that kind of drove Raptors fans crazy, and I think are probably the source of why Raptors fans are kind of okay with Patterson leaving, which I don't really get because he was so good for the team for so long. But that's going to be a source of frustration if that creeps back into his game, because sometimes he will say, he will seem to think like, oh, I can do this. I can do a little bit more than I'm actually capable of. And sometimes he doesn't totally play within himself. On defense, his rebounding is not incredible. He's better as a four than he is as a five. If he's at the five, like, you better hope that you have a good rebounding four out there with him. And, you know, it's only going to work against certain teams. Like, it worked against Boston this year, and Boston was a horrible rebounding team. But if there's a good rebounding team with a center who can kind of bang with Patterson, like, Patterson's not a great he's not going to out-muscle guys for balls because he's not super-duper strong. Like, he's strong enough to defend, you know, strong wing players and things like that. He can defend fours just fine, but he's not going to bang around with the biggest centers in the league by any means. So that's a sort of a drawback with his game as well. And yeah, like, he's a $5 million player. His market dropped for a reason, and he's not a perfect player by any means. But I do think there's going to be some recency bias built into that, though, because he did finish the season so poorly, and he had the injury that was kind of hampering him in the last half of the season. I do think he's very much more the player that he was, say, in 2015-16 than he was down the stretch of this season. But yeah, if the shot's not there, he becomes very frustrating, because if the shot's not there, his confidence kind of wanes, and that's when you get into weird decision making where he'll pass off open shots. That's something to definitely watch out for. But I think still overall, like, you're getting more positive than negative with Patrick Patterson, especially at just over $5 million a year.
Yeah, I wonder how that inconsistency is going to affect them, because they're still not a great shooting team by any measure. I mean, they still have flaws. We'll see when Alex Abrines plays more and Doug McDermott plays more, if those guys play more, how much better of a shooting team they are. But, like, the Thunder were last in three-point percentage last year, and Paul George is going to help with that. Patterson's going to help with that. But when he's not going, if he's not going, then you have four out of five guys in your starting lineup, assuming Robertson's there. You have four out of five guys in your starting lineup who are below average three-point shooters for their position. And that can hurt with spacing. And you have a guy like Westbrook who loves just driving to the rim every time he can. That can hurt with the offense. Now, granted, Russell Westbrook worked pretty darn well with an offense that had a lot worse shooting than that this year. But that being said, the offense didn't. The offense was mediocre. So I'm interested to see how the offense is going to work when he's not really shooting. The good thing, though, is that guys guard him. Like, guys, even when he's not shooting, like, NBA players don't stop guarding guys when someone's going through a January slump. Like, if you're a guy who can make shots and can hurt you, NBA guys are not as prone to help off of you. That's just the way it works. It's all about reputation, even. Like, when an old guy loses his shot and stops shooting it, or some random guy has a good reputation as a shooter and has some random season in the middle of his career where he shoots 30% from three, guys don't stop guarding that guy. It's just really based on rep. And he's got the rep, so he's going to help with the spacing at the very least, which is something the Thunder need. So that's going to help with that a lot. I wonder how his playoff performance is going to transfer too, because he's had some down playoff performances, as have the Raptors in a lot of ways, and I wonder how that's going to go for them too, because I think we can, you know, barring injury or something catastrophic, we can assume this is going to be a playoff team next year. So that's something that I wonder how it's going to go as well. But I think it's a really good signing, it's a really good fit, and it works really well for them. It works really well for them, and. Salary-wise, it's a really nice fit too, because I thought he was going to cost more. I thought he was going to be priced out of the Thunder's market, and it turns out he was not.
Yeah, it kind of bums me out that the Raptors weren't able to bring him back for that number, but maybe the relationship had just run its course with how it finished with him not coming to locker clean out and things like that. But I would be interested to go back and look. I feel like, just from what I remember, I might have to do more of a study into this, but like, look at Patterson's three-point shooting and sort of look at the team's record throughout whatever months he's doing well and doing poorly. Because like, I remember a lot of the Raptors' best runs came while Patterson was just lights out from three, like in 2014-15, two seasons ago, when they started like 24-7 before Kyle Lowry started to get dinged up from carrying the team with DeMar DeRozan out. You know, I think Patterson shot something like 48% for the first 2 months of the season, and the Raptors were 24-7. I think the same thing happened last year when they went on their run. After they started the season pretty cold, they were like 8-6, and I think Lowry and Patterson were both having rough shooting months. And then December kicked in, and they went on a tear. And I think that very much coincided with Patterson knocking down threes. It's kind of weird. He's kind of a barometer for how your team is doing, even though he's kind of the lowest usage guy on your team in an ideal world. But yeah, he can fluctuate a little bit, but overall, again, he's always among the leaders in plus minus. He's always going to have a positive, you know, impact on the court, no matter what lineup he's in. He can fit into a bunch of lineups. He's going to be missed up here in Toronto.
Anything to plug or, tell my listeners or anything along those lines before we head out?
Yeah, check out Locked On Raptors if you're interested in what's going on with the Raptors. A pretty interesting offseason going on. With the Celtics adding Gordon Hayward, I can imagine the Raptors are probably scrambling to try to add some depth to try to go up against them, because as of right now, I feel like those are probably the second and third best teams in the East. The Celtics probably have the edge with Gordon Hayward, but the Raptors were, I think, better than their record last year. So tune into Locked On Raptors and I'll break all that down. Raptors HQ, I've written a bunch of stuff of late about all sorts of stuff. I wrote like a reaction piece to Kyle Lowry signing, if you want to read into why it's so important that the Raptors kept him, and rebuilding versus not rebuilding when you're pretty good. I think the Thunder are a pretty good case of this. I mean, they were never going to rebuild with just Russell Westbrook, but staying pretty good last year ended up working out pretty well for them. So I think the Raptors kind of have some parallels there. Lots of stuff. RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter at WoodleySean. You can find all my work there. So, just go there and you'll find everything listed.
Yeah, you know, people talk about, a lot how you should bottom out. You don't want to be in the middle. And Zach Lowe has made this point on his podcast, and I think it's a really good one. Like, being good can get you stuff. Like, Paul George didn't want to go to the Nuggets because the Nuggets were not good enough. Like, certain teams maybe could have been Paul George players, but they just weren't quite good enough. And there are certain teams, you know, there are other players out there who just, you know, they don't want to sign with certain guys. You know, the Nuggets wanted Dwayne Wade last year. Couldn't get him. They weren't good enough. Like, there are certain advantages to being, not necessarily being in the middle, but being slightly above the middle. And I think it's an interesting philosophical debate seeing some of these teams who have stayed around the middle. You know, Houston never bottomed out.
Yeah.
They never did it. They twice went down to 40-ish win territory and then came back up to being really good again. Houston doesn't bottom out for the most part. That's not how they build. And they've been able to, you know, Chris Paul doesn't want to go to Houston if Houston is not good. You know, they stayed around at that 41 wins, and then they rebuilt it, and they gave out those contracts, and then Chris Paul ends up going there. And, like, I think those are interesting points. I think it's an interesting part of the conversation about bottoming out versus staying good. As for plugging stuff, Locked On Raptors listeners, you can listen to Locked On Thunder if you're interested in the Thunder. You can follow my stuff at the Norman Transcript, normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. You can follow me on Twitter or just see the links there at Fred Katz, FredKatz. And yeah, that's about all I got. For my listeners, I'm going to be talking about Gordon Hayward and him signing with Boston, his effect on a thing that I recorded. I recorded another podcast before this for tomorrow. That was supposed to go. But then obviously that became the secondary story once Patrick Patterson signed. So we're going to be splicing into a conversation with John Hamm after this. But I don't think that your listeners are going to be hearing that. But if they do want to hear that about the possibilities of the Thunder getting Marcus Smart in a salary dump, they can come to my show.
Do that, people. Listen to the Thunder potentially getting a guy who can't shoot. I feel like it would be very good for the Thunder.
Hey, he fits. He fits. He's feisty. He went to Oklahoma State. He's long. He defends. He's athletic. And he can't shoot. That's exactly the Sam Presti prototype.
Who needs one Andre Roberson when you can have two?
There you go, man. Thanks for doing this at a ridiculous hour of the morning.
Absolutely, man. We'll do it soon, hopefully, if the Raptors and Thunder play in the finals next year.
Yeah, it was good talking to you.
Cheers.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, so I'm here with the one, the only, the John Hamm. Mr. Hamm, what's going on?
Having a pretty good 4th of July this year, less work than this time last year, so it's good.
I'd imagine. There was a lot of work last 4th of July.
Kind of was. Kind of busy. I'm feeling for the folks in Utah today.
So, yeah, I know. Well, so let's talk about that. So it's 8:45 Eastern time right now. I'm in Orlando. You're in Oklahoma. The news just broke that Gordon Hayward is going to Boston, although I guess it kind of just broke. It really broke like 7 hours ago, but Gordon Hayward just posted on Players Tribune that he is going to Boston officially, and now everything's going down with Boston. We don't have that much time to talk, so let's just talk about the effects of this on Oklahoma City, because there could be some legitimate effects on the Thunder, right?
Sure. Yeah, there could be. Obviously, the first thing I think many people are going to think of is the Thunder's pursuit of Rudy Gay. This opens up, obviously, Miami could be a suitor. Utah could be a suitor. And I think they're now both in position to offer more than Oklahoma City can. So, if money is a thing that Rudy Gay wants, it would be totally understandable. Those teams have got an advantage at the moment.
Right. Yeah. But Utah's got about $77 million, not including cap holds. Utah's got about $77 million, I think, on the books. Is that right? I think they're somewhere in there. Or maybe I looked at that and it doesn't include.
Yeah.
Maybe that didn't include Joe Ingles.
Oh, okay. And he's
but
got
no,
new,
I think that's right. Let's say that that's right. Either way, they've got bird rights on Ingles, right? So they could sign Rudy Gay and then sign Ingles after. But I think they could have right. $77 million on the books or something like that, which is well below the cap. That's like $22 million below the cap. So they got plenty of room, and that's way more than Rudy Gay would cost them. So they got plenty of room to offer something to Rudy Gay, and Miami's obviously below the cap as well, and would have opportunity to offer something to Rudy Gay also. Side note, if Miami offers to Rudy Gay, it lessens the chance of Deion Waiters getting a big payday, which would be disappointing, I think, to all Thunder fans. So I think that's something that should be noted in this conversation as well. The Thunder, I mean, I just don't see a conceivable way. Unless Rudy Gay is just dying to go to Oklahoma City.
I can't take Deion getting screwed 2 years in a row.
I can't see a conceivable way unless Rudy Gay, and I have heard something that Royce reported earlier today, and I've heard the same thing, that he was impressed with the meeting with Oklahoma City. Nobody would tell me what his reaction was to Enes Kanter's tweet. I just couldn't get it from anyone, so I unfortunately can't break any news on that. But I heard that the meeting went really well with Oklahoma City. That team is confident that they made a really strong impression on him, and they're confident that it's a place that he wants to be, but I don't think they're extremely confident that it's a place that he wants to be for any price, no matter what. And the Thunder, if they're not willing to offer, if they're not able to figure out a sign and trade, which is something that would hard cap them. People talk about, well, they can't give them the mid-level exception because it'll hard cap them, but a sign and trade would hard cap them too, and they want to do a sign and trade. So I don't see why giving them the full mid-level would be an issue then either. But even the full mid-level is like a little over $8 million, and that could be too little for someone like Rudy Gay also.
Sure. And, you know, that brings in the difficulty because, you know, I get a lot of comments because of posted salary information about the Thunder and their cap situation. And, you know, people, the solution to a lot of people is just dump Cantor and Singlet. Okay, where? I mean, that's, you can't just say that and not have a place to dump them. And then also factor in the cost of dumping, you know, one or both of them. So, anyway, there's that. And also when Sacramento signed Zach Randolph or agreed to terms with Zach Randolph today, I think that pretty much takes Enes Kanter out of their equation in terms of a sign and trade.
Yeah, that's probably right. And you know what? You know what really says the market? People talk about, you can just get rid of Kanter. He's still an asset. He's a movable asset. If Kanter's a movable asset, then why the heck do you want to move him? All right? Pick one. He's right. Either a movable asset or in a movable asset by definition is somebody you probably want in your team, not a last resort thing to just get rid of. Like, you don't dump a movable asset unless it's something that you absolutely have to do, like something we're going to talk about with Gordon Hayward and the residual effects on the Celtics and how that's going to affect Marcus Smart and maybe others and maybe the Thunder in a second. But, like, you don't just dump a movable asset. You dump something that's mostly an immovable asset. And it's just silly to me that people think, well, this is not a good deal for the Thunder. Why don't they get rid of him for a first-round pick or get rid of him for something that's of value to another team? When, like, look at Zebo. Zebo's on the open market. He's a veteran, and he gets 2 for $24. That's $6 million a year less than Enes Kanter makes. I mean, guys who play that style are not valued for the price that Enes Kanter makes. Some of them aren't even valued for a significantly smaller price. I mean, look at Jahlil Okafor with Philly. It took forever to, you know, Philly's been trying to move him forever and nothing.
Right. And he's far less expensive than Enes. So, yeah, that's the thing. So I've tried to look at other sign and trade solutions, but I mean, unless you start packaging together, you know, Kyle Singler's contract plus Jeremy Grant plus Hustis and to do, you know, some kind of a direct sign and trade with Sacramento. And then Sacramento, by agreeing to terms with these guys, they may have to renounce Rudy Gay in order to pull off these signings. So it may take a sign and trade off the table, although you can still order those in a certain way. But it strikes me as unlikely.
It strikes me as unlikely. Unless the scenario to get Rudy Gay is really just if you can – it's not even how much do you like Oklahoma City. It's not even convincing him that he loves the Thunder or loves playing with Westbrook or loves playing with Paul George or whatever it is, the way that you probably sell him on doing it and the way you sell him on taking less money, if that's the route they end up having to go with, which seems like it likely is you convince him coming off an Achilles that he should take like a 1+1, so a 1-year deal with a player option, and this is his best chance at showing that he can still ball. And if he can show that he can, if he has a better chance at showing he can still play, maybe he loses money in 2017-18, but he makes way more money down the line. And if you can convince him that if he goes to Miami, he's going to look significantly worse than if he's in Oklahoma City, then that's the way you convince him to go to Oklahoma City. But I think that's the only way you get him to take less money to go to Oklahoma City, because he's a guy who is in a physically unsure situation right now coming off an Achilles, and he's going to want to take whatever money he can probably take. And that should be his mentality. I think that would be any reasonable person's mentality stuck in the situation that he's in right now after injuring his Achilles.
Right. The other solution is obviously Taj Gibson. If Minnesota and Taj could agree to amend his contract, add a third year, either at a team option or maybe non-guaranteed, and work a sign and trade to create a trade exception or make it part of a three-way trade to bring in Rudy Gay. But so you still got that hard cap issue. They would still have to offload some salary. These are just some of the logistical issues they're running up against here.
So let's move on to another thing that's happening in the NBA right now. Marcus Smart stuff. My caveat is it's 8:53 p.m. Eastern time right now. The NBA moves so damn fast. Something could happen by the time somebody listens to this podcast. Something could happen in like 3 minutes, right? Like that's
– Yeah, right.
That's the way this works. So Gordon Hayward signed with Boston, but Boston doesn't have exactly max cap room. They have close, and I'm sure mm-hmm. they'll be able to create max cap room, but they don't have max cap room. And so they had to pull back rescind the qualifying offer that they gave to Kelly Olynyk. And so he's now mm-hmm. an unrestricted free agent, which is honestly going to be something that's interesting because Kelly Olynyk is a pretty useful NBA player. He shoots threes and is a pretty solid offensive player too. So I'm intrigued to see what his market is going to be as a relatively young guy on the unrestricted market. But that's not really the Thunder-related thing that we have to talk about because the Thunder have a $4.9 million trade exception, which we can explain in a second. And even after pulling back the qualifying offer for Olynyk, the Celtics need to unload salary. Conceivably, it would have to be Jay Crowder or Terry Rozier and something else smaller or Marcus Smart. And a source told me that they're already putting in calls about dumping Marcus Smart so that they can sign Gordon Hayward. Now, John, like you're going to explain it better than me because this is your area of expertise, far more than mine. So would you like to explain exactly how the Thunder could go about doing this and why this is actually not some sort of pipe dream? This is, who knows if it's going to happen, but this is a realistic possibility for them in trying to get a backup guard.
Yeah, so, Thunder fans should be familiar with the concept of a trade exception by now, but just in case you aren't, these are things that are generated when a team trades one player and takes back less salary in return. In this case, they traded Ersan Ilyasova to Philadelphia for Jeremy Grant, created a trade exception. They used part of that to acquire Doug McDermott, which leaves that $4.9 million, which is basically a tool, since they're over the salary cap, that they could send out next to nothing and bring back a player making up to $4.9, I guess $5 million if you tack on the $100,000 buffer. And so that's the advantage, is that they are sitting there with that tool. There's a few other teams that have something similar. Chicago's got a large trade exception, like $15 million, I think, from the Butler deal. Dallas, it looks like they have one as well. And let's see, the Clippers, of course, off the Chris Paul trade. Milwaukee has a $5 million one. So there's a few teams out there with those. And then there's a few others with cap room as well. So
right, a team like, Miami could sneak in and pull something off. Or else? Who else has room? Philly could do it. Or the Nets.
Atlanta.
He's a guy the Nets would want to go after, right? Like maybe the Nets would be willing to give up a little bit more. The Thunder wouldn't be able to include a first round pick in a deal for him,
right?
Because conceivably, they could trade a pick all the way in the future to the earliest pick first rounder that they can trade is in 2022 because their protected 2018 is going to Utah. Then they have another protected first going to Philadelphia, which could be as soon as 2020 and possibly a little bit later than that, depending on what happens with the Utah deal. But in all likelihood, that's a 2020 pick going to Philadelphia, and they could trade a 2022. But they also have that Chicago pick. Like, that Chicago pick is a really good pick. And I'll tell you what, it's possible that Chicago pick is more – they have Chicago's unprotected 2018 second rounder. And it's possible that we come to the draft next year – and that Chicago second rounder is actually a more valuable pick than their first round pick.
Right. Yeah, because there's no cap hold involved. You're basically picking a few picks out of the first round at this point, and you're going to be able to sign a guy for potentially up to 3 years on a minimum scale contract potentially. So yeah, it's got some perks that maybe a late first rounder doesn't quite have.
Chicago is not going to be good. I mean, that pick could be inside the first five picks of the second round.
Right. Yeah.
Chicago is not going to be a good team. So that's...
Yeah,
that's...
it is interesting. Yeah, that's a pick that... we're hearing Marcus Smart. Terry Rozier as well is another one. But again, like you say, you're hearing Smart being floated around out there a lot. And given Boston's sudden glut at the wing positions, that's not surprising.
No. No, it's not. And I don't see them. Maybe they want to trade Jay Crowder or something down at some point. But Jay Crowder is not a guy I would want to just dump. I mean, Jay Crowder, if I'm trading Jay Crowder, I want value back for Jay Crowder. That's an extremely good role player on, maybe better than a role player. Maybe I'm underselling him by calling him a role player. When I say role player, I just mean he's not a, you know, he's not a top two guy on a championship team, but he's an extremely good player, an extremely versatile player who does a lot of things really well on an extraordinarily team-friendly contract. So that's somebody that'd be good. John, short podcast today. I appreciate you coming on so last second to talk about this with me because I didn't know what to do, and you're just always saving my ass here.
Well, happy to I was going to say save your ass. No, I'm not happy to do that. I'm happy to help wherever I can, Fred.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Maybe we'll this is like the shortest podcast we've done. Normally we go forever. But you got anything coming up? This is your time, man. This is free agency. Anything coming up or to plug or anything like that?
No, the biggest thing I've got out right now, I've got an article on Daily Thunder that breaks down Paul George, the options he'll have with Oklahoma City. You know, whether he qualifies for the designated veteran player exception, spoiler alert, he doesn't. And then basically what advantages, if any, would the Thunder have to re-sign him? So go check that out on dailythunder.com if you haven't already.
Yes, and I retweeted that too. It's a nice little breakdown on what the Thunder can and can't do with George. And you can find that, John tweeted it out, right? You can find that on John's Twitter, yes. At John M. Hamm. I'm at Fred Katz, FredKatz, John M. Hamm. Hamm is with two M's. So I'm on every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Wednesday episode right here. I'll be back on Friday, unless, of course, some huge news happens in between. Thunder signs somebody big or something like that. I'm always down to do an emergency episode this time of year, like I did with Paul George earlier in the week. You can head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, like I said, at Fred Katz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage. What's next for the Thunder there? I have lots of blog posts on free agents and any sort of news and all that kind of stuff. You can check that all out on Thunder Road, normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. That's going to do it for today. Back on Friday, maybe sooner if something crazy happens. But until then, thank you to John. Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Support for this podcast comes from NetSuite. NetSuite lets you see what's going on with your business in real time, from accounting to order management and much more. You've outgrown your business management software. Let NetSuite help. Go to netsuite.com/podcast to get your free guide and find out why NetSuite is a leading business management solution for growing companies. Get up and running fast with NetSuite.